switch, all systems are go. Are you sure? Control is not convinced, but the computer has the evidence. No need to report. The countdown starts. Watching in a trance, the crew is certain, nothing left to chance. All is working, trying to relax. Up in the capsule, send me up a drink. Jokes, Major Tom. The count goes on.
From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Sometime tomorrow, Lex will post on the coasttocoastam.com website that audio of that man getting beaten by the four women in the accident. So you'll be able to download that. So he'll do that. So just keep your eyes and ears on the coasttocoastam.com website, and I'll have that there for you sometime tomorrow. I mean, hundreds of you have asked for a little piece of that audio. Lex will be working on it all night long. We'll be back in a moment. We'll go live to England. Marcus Allen, our guest. The topic, the moon landing. And welcome back to Coast, Marcus Allen, our guest. Marcus, earlier last hour I asked you why haven't we had any whistleblowers at all, and you said, well, there are some. Who are they? Who are these people?
These are people who've worked in NASA, worked in the organization. They're people who have come forward with pieces of information that needs to be examined. But primarily, we don't want to hear that news. We don't want to believe that the Apollo program was in some way manipulated.
I mean, have they come forward publicly? Because I can't find them.
They haven't come forward publicly insofar as
their names and who they are.
John Doe hasn't stood up and said, I was in the control room during Apollo X, and I know perfectly well that we were playing tapes of the simulation mission. Nobody said that because, to be honest, he wouldn't be alive 10 minutes later. He'd get lynched because people don't want to believe it. So the whistleblowers, there are one or two more public ones, but most of them have said, okay, I don't think that everything that you've heard about Apollo was as accurate as it should have been. I suggest you examine the record. And what has happened is that people outside NASA have taken up that challenge and have examined the Apollo record, which is easily available. NASA were particularly keen to ensure that everybody got to see it. It's when you start to examine it, as I have done, I mean, you could say that I'm a whistleblower. I didn't work for NASA. To be honest, I've never visited America. Maybe I'm not going to be allowed to. I don't know. I hope I will be. I'd love to come.
Well, it's a wonderful country. You should be.
I have heard, and the people are particularly nice. The Americans I've met over in Britain here are, without doubt, the most friendly, open, generous people as a race that I've met.
Yep.
So from that point of view, I have no problem with American people in any way, shape, or form.
And we don't get much credit worldwide, Marcus, but that's another story all by itself.
Well, this goes back. I mean, we're with you on that, because don't forget, Britain had an empire that we got beaten over the head about for years, and we're still getting beaten over the head about it. But you speak to many people who were allegedly under the British yoke or the rule, and they will say the best thing that ever happened to us, but they're not going to say it too publicly.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay,
anyway,
back to this.
What we've got to look at is whether, if there aren't whistleblowers, that doesn't mean to say that there's nothing wrong. There have been whistleblowers. There have been people who've got up and said, not everything that you've heard about Apollo is 100% true. Other people, such as myself, David Percy, who is a friend of mine, has done a lot of research into this area, people who have looked into it have concluded that at the very least, the Apollo record has been manipulated. Now, in what way it's been manipulated is a matter of debate. And
well,
there are people,
and I won't doubt that. I mean, I've looked at over the last few years, and most recently today, some of these photographs, And I do have to say some of them do look manipulated or changed. To me, it doesn't mean or prove we didn't go.
Absolutely.
Because I also like your theory, your possibility that they went, came back, and had no photographs. And they went, oh, my God, now what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You can't go back again, at least at that point.
Well, technically you could, because let's assume that the first mission that landed, we're told, was Apollo 11, which was the most famous one because it was the first one.
Sure.
And there were five others after that. So, yes, they did go back.
Well, that's true. And I don't think all the photographs were botched, were they? Or maybe it was inherent with the camera.
Well, I think the camera is the key to this. And maybe we should just take a few minutes just to look at what the camera was about, because the camera produced the photographs.
Okay.
Now,
what kind of cameras did they use?
Right. It was they all used the same camera. This was the camera that was used on the lunar surface to take photographs of the astronauts. The ones we're all familiar with. They were all Hasselblad cameras. Now, Hasselblad is a camera made in Sweden, but it happens to be the best camera you can buy.
Now, were they made especially for the moon flight, or were they the same cameras that you would use on the planet here?
They're very similar to the one you could go into a shop today and buy. You could go into a shop today and buy a similar camera. It's the Hasselblad 500. It was such a good camera, they haven't really changed the design of it much since it was first produced. It was altered because there were various things that needed to be changed on the camera, and these were done by Hasselblad in Sweden. The most important thing was there's no viewfinder, because you couldn't use it. If you were in a spacesuit, you couldn't get your head close enough to the viewfinder.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's on top of the camera. So there was no viewfinder, and they wanted to remove the mirror, which is, it's a single-lens reflex camera. They removed the mirror from inside. It was a motor drive camera. The film was advanced automatically. As soon as you'd taken a picture, the film advanced automatically using an electric, a couple of batteries and a motor. It had no exposure meter built in. Hasselblad cameras do not have exposure meters built in. It was manually operated in the focusing, setting of the shutter speed, 1/60th, 25th, 250th.
Mm-hmm.
It was also manually operated in setting the aperture, f5.6, f8, f11. All these were manual operation, and the shutter button is on the front of the camera. So when the camera is mounted on an astronaut's chest, as they all were, he couldn't see where the shutter button was.
He'd have to feel around for it, I guess. And how do you do that with those big gloves on, right?
Well, you're wearing armored gauntlets, so you're not going to feel a lot through them. You also have no means of knowing if you've actually taken a photograph. Have you pressed the shutter, or did you miss and press a bit of the camera? Because the only means of knowing if you've taken a photograph on the special lunar Hasselblads, the moon cameras, was a little dial on the side of the camera indicating if the film had advanced.
Well,
now,
when
you take a photograph, you'd press the shutter and you hear a click, and you know you've taken a picture.
Right.
And most people are familiar with cameras. Now, in space, you won't hear the click because sound doesn't travel in a vacuum, which is what the moon is. So you have this problem. You've got a camera that has no viewfinder, has no exposure meter. You have to estimate the light, which nobody's been to the moon before to take photographs, so nobody knows how bright the light is. We know it's pretty bright up there. All we do know is there are no clouds, so it's going to be sunlight. So you've got no exposure meter. You've got to manually set the shutter speed, the aperture setting, the focus ring has to be adjusted manually, and there were little wings put onto them so you could move it with your armored gauntlets. The shutter button was not visible from inside a spacesuit, and you didn't know if you'd taken a photograph. With those limitations of use, some of the most iconic photographs of the 20th century were produced. I think not. I think the photographs that we have seen produced by NASA as evidence for the landing on the moon were professionally taken in simulation and training exercise sets on Earth by professional photographers to produce the PR images that NASA subsequently issued to the world as evidence for the success of the Apollo mission.
All right, that's that is a possibility that they did take those pictures and give them in addition to it. Let me ask you one question. There's a picture out there that shows the reflection of, and I think it was a picture of Armstrong that Aldrin took, that shows a picture of the lander reflecting in his visor. But it also looks like, to me, it could be a reflection of a photographer standing in front of him that you could see in his visor. In your opinion, is that a real picture, or did somebody somehow superimpose a little tiny picture of a photographer in his suit, not spacesuit, I mean just normal clothes, obviously on a set? Is that possible?
It's possible, but if you're going to produce photographs that are supposedly taken on the moon, you're going to make quite sure that you've got everything absolutely correct. So
how could you make a mistake and get that one out into the system?
Well, exactly. Now, obviously, with the internet and the amount of
computer graphics
software, Photoshop, I've seen photographs showing about three astronauts on the moon. It's very easy to manipulate the images. So the only images that I use are the ones that that were available up to 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't use any images that were taken off the internet because they can be manipulated. Now, obviously, if you can manipulate them so easily, NASA may well have done so. But manipulated them to make us believe that what we're looking at was what we'd expect to see on the moon. But because only 12 people have ever been onto the moon, so we're told, those are the 12 people who one would have to ask and say, did you take this on the moon? And if you ask them, which I've done, they will say yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, Edgar Mitchell's been on this program before, Apollo 14 astronaut. He said he's been there, and he comes across to me as a very sincere, honest person, Marcus.
They all are. They are admirable. All astronauts are admirable men. They're the best of the best. That's why they were chosen. They were trained within an inch of their lives to be the best and to take the American people's dreams and hopes to the moon. That's their purpose. But you have to say one thing. They were all military men.
True.
Every single one of them.
Yes.
They had all taken their oaths of honor and secrecy, not only to each other, but to their country and to their commander-in-chief. So when their commander-in-chief says, jump, they only have one question. How high, sir?
I think by this time, one of them would have come forward and said, we didn't go. See, that's my point here. Throughout this entire episode over the years, and you talk about there are whistleblowers, but there are no names, there are no places, and not one truly has said, hey, my name is John Smith, and I was in the control room, and I saw the guy back running some film that we picked up and put up on the monitors. We're not getting any of that.
No, that is quite true. We're not getting that because that is what people would like to see. And that is what, if you like, that is the one thing that is missing on this.
Could this have been done, if it's a hoax, could this have been done with the knowledge of a few people, and that even the people in the control room thought they were actually on the moon?
Yeah. My view is that at the very most, 50 people might have had knowledge of a manipulation. The 400,000 people who worked on Apollo had no knowledge of this because they had no need to have that knowledge. At some point, a decision would have been made because, don't forget, the original promise was that the landing on the moon would be live on television. Now, if there was the slightest doubt that one of the astronauts would become ill, maybe as a result of radiation-induced sickness, because the first indication of radiation poisoning is vomiting, if there would have been the slightest doubt that any astronaut would have been anything other than 100% fit during the whole mission, would America have risked an astronaut throwing up in his helmet on the moon? I think not. So there would have been a decision made at some point, and I think that decision was made around 1966, 1967. We're going to have to be very careful on this one. We're going to have to be in, we're going to have to ensure that what we have promised, we can deliver. And what was promised was live coverage of the lunar landings. What was delivered was live coverage of the lunar landings, we were told. The more you examine it, the more you realize that the detail is where the errors start creeping in. And in certain occasions, they were a little over-enthusiastic about the detail. Now, if you recall on Apollo 14, this was the... That's Mitchell's flight with Al Shepard. They did the famous golf shot.
Right.
Alan Shepard, a very keen golfer, had taken a golf ball onto the moon, mm-hmm. and I believe it was, we're told it was a 6-iron.
Right, and Mitchell had the camera, right?
And Mitchell had the camera. And after they'd done their required experiments, they said, we're going to try a golf shot. And he swung at it and missed the first time and hit it the second time. And he said, oh, there it goes, miles and miles and miles, which is what you'd expect.
Right.
And there's a photograph of this particular event, the golf shot, that was in the Kennedy Space Center for several years. I'm sure many people have seen it. A big blow-up of this photograph. And the photograph showed the lander, the flag, the antenna for communication with Earth. It showed Al Shepard with a golf club, and the golf ball was in midair, and Ed Mitchell. And they're all in the same photograph.
How could he be in it if he was taking the picture?
Exactly. That was my question.
Unless, did he put it up on a tripod?
No, he didn't have a tripod, and the Hasselblad cameras don't have a delayed action shutter facility.
Ah.
So the obvious explanation is it's a still from the video. No, it's not, because the video still, which exists of that particular event, shows a different scene to this one. The point is that the photograph, and I'm saying it's a photograph, it's not a video still, because in every lunar photograph there are what's called the crosshairs, the reticules, little crosses on the photograph, which was part of the camera. So every mm-hmm. photograph has them. There are 25 on each image. And these appear in this photograph of Alan Shepard doing the golf shot. It's a composite photograph. And once you examine it closely enough, you can see the other four, the other five photographs from which it was derived. It's a fake. But it was presented as a genuine photograph taken on the moon of Alan Shepard and the golf shot. It's a fake. And NASA actually admit this now.
Tell me about the American flag photograph.
The American flag. There's a great deal of nonsense talked about these famous flags that flap in the wind. They don't flap in the wind.
There is no wind there.
There is no wind on the moon, and nobody left one of the studio doors open either. It's a fabrication. It's a good headline statement. Oh, the flag's moving, but it can't.
Well, now here's another question, though, for us, Marcus. Why would these photographs be given out with all these apparent glares and mistakes?
At the time, nobody had spotted these. It was only literally 25 years after the event, 25 years, that the people were able to sit down, examine them without the emotion of the event. If you recall at the time, there was a lot of emotion around about it. It was a very special time. People didn't want to believe that what they were being shown and what they were looking at were in some way manipulated. They didn't want to believe that. But it was 20, 25 years later that people were able to sit down, examine them, and say, okay, now these are the conditions under which we're told these photographs were taken. On the lunar surface, there is extreme temperatures. There's no pressure. It's a vacuum. These are the cameras that we're told that were taking the photographs. These are the results of the photographs. These are the images. And they don't add up. The detail and the sheer professionalism of the photograph. They are brilliant photographs. As a photographer myself, I would be proud to take those photographs. They're correctly exposed with no exposure meter. They're accurately focused with armored gauntlets. They're well composed with no viewfinder, with no heads cut off. You try taking a photograph without looking through the viewfinder and see how many heads you cut off of taking a picture of somebody. It's actually quite difficult. They also took a lot of panoramic photographs, long, big 180-degree scenes, and all of them overlap. That's almost impossible to do without a viewfinder to see where the camera's pointed. There are very few dud photographs. Yes, of course there are some. But you look at the Apollo 11 photographs. It's called the famous sequence. It's on the NASA website, nasa.gov.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Magazine 40. Magazine 40 was the actual magazine on the back of the Hasselblad. They took about 120 photographs in each magazine. It's a big magazine. Magazine 40 contains the 120 photographs taken on the Apollo 11 moonwalk. Every single one of them is on the NASA website. Not one of them is badly taken, wrongly focused.
All right, I see what you mean. We'll be back with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
We're going to open up the phone lines for you at the top of the hour, and also in that hour, we will open up Fast Blasts for an Instapoll where I will ask you whether you think we went to the moon or not. I'll be back in a moment with our guest Marcus Allen on Coast to Coast AM. Marcus, why didn't the Russians ever blow the lid on this? Surely they would have jumped up and down if they had felt that this was a hoax.
Absolutely. Of course they would. It's, again, that's probably the number two question. Why didn't the Russians blow the whistle? Because it would have been to their advantage to do so, wouldn't it?
I think so, yeah.
If they could show America up, wow, yeah, go for it. Okay. It's necessary to look at what was happening in Russia around the same time. This is 1969. Because Russia had the same information as we all did as to what Apollo were doing, because it was live on television. In Russia, the space program, or the Soviet space program, had been driven by one man, Sergei Korolev, he was called. He was known at the time as the chief designer. And he was the man, he was a brilliant man, almost as brilliant as Wernher von Braun was in America, who was the architect of the American space program. Sergei Korolev had created all the initial Russian successes. In early 1967, he was admitted to hospital for a minor operation. Regrettably, he died on the operating table, which left the Russian space program without a leader. And there were a lot of people at that time vying for leadership, and the whole Russian space program, if you look at the evidence of it, basically stalled at that time, from 1967 onwards. There was very little success going on. Some of the rockets blew up, and there wasn't a great deal of success. By 1969, America had started to pull well ahead. The big Saturn V rockets were very successful. They were working well. They were demonstrating to the Russians that they basically had a bit of a challenge on their hand. Now, America lands on the moon, July 1969. Why didn't the Russians blow the whistle? Because if they could say, as we do now, we think there's something wrong here. Okay, now the question to ask is, who in Russia would have blown the whistle? You would need a degree of technical information,
true,
which a lot of people in Russia would have had, because they were attempting to reach the moon as well. They had made the statement, they'd even built some of the spacecraft to go to the moon. And just as an aside on that one, the Russians had publicly announced that they were not intending to send any cosmonauts to the moon until, quote, they could ensure their protection from the dangers of radiation, unquote. And because they couldn't ensure their protection from the dangers of radiation, they hadn't sent anybody to the moon up till that point. Okay, so in Russia, somebody notices the same things we're noticing now. In order to blow the whistle, it would be necessary to persuade the Russian or the Soviet president, Brezhnev, at the time, to make the announcement. But who had access with the knowledge, the technical knowledge, that the Americans had possibly manipulated the reports of the landing? Who would have had the political access to the Politburo of the time, as well as the technical information to do so? And I contend that there was nobody with the necessary lobbying ability to do so.
So
because
the
Russian system of government is very different from the democracies of the West at the time.
But you're saying then that they didn't have the kind of information they needed to go public with this.
They would almost certainly have had the same information as everybody, say, in Britain or in Europe would have had, as well as America. But they wouldn't have had the political access and the political persuasiveness to ensure that an announcement could be made by the Russian president. A better question would be, why did nobody in the West blow the whistle? Why did no photographer come forward?
Well, and to this day, they have not.
Well, I have asked many professional photographers. I've asked them one question. I said, I'm giving you a roll of film with 100 exposures on it. I'm giving you a camera that has no exposure meter, no viewfinder. You've got to wear heavy-duty gardening gloves to operate it. How many of those 100 photographs could you ensure were correctly exposed, correctly composed, accurately focused? Their answer is normally, I would say, 50, 60%. I said, could you do 100%? Absolutely not. So the challenge is, who could produce 100% accurately focused, composed, and exposed photographs under those conditions?
Probably nobody under those conditions.
But that is what we're being asked to believe the Apollo astronauts achieved.
Is that now, why you brought up that magazine 40?
Sorry?
Is that why you were bringing up magazine 40 before the break?
Yes. Magazine 40 is the series of photographs taken primarily by Buzz Aldrin of Neil Armstrong on the moon. The other question is, can anybody produce a photograph of Neil Armstrong on the moon? And the answer is no. There is no photograph of Neil Armstrong on the moon. They both had cameras. They were both issued with cameras. But only one camera was used. That's why there's only one magazine of photographs showing the astronauts on the Apollo 11 lunar mission.
There's no photograph of Neil Armstrong on the moon? Nowhere?
Well, have you ever seen one?
Well, I can't remember if I did or not, to tell you the truth.
Can anybody point to a photograph of Neil Armstrong? There is supposed to be one showing his back when Buzz Aldrin was taking one of these famous panoramas, and they catch Neil Armstrong in the middle distance, well, quite a long way in the distance, but it's only the back view. There's no way you can actually tell if it's Neil Armstrong or not without a fair amount of deduction. So there is a bit of a mystery as to the first man on the moon. There's no photograph of him. No photograph of Neil Armstrong on the moon. And I believe I'm correct in saying
I have to check
that Neil Armstrong... has never given an interview.
Well, he may have given a few lately, but not a lot about the moon landing. That's for sure.
And one other point, if I could go back to that piece that you introduced the show with, at the top of the show,
the
famous commentary of the landing of Apollo 11.
Right.
What's wrong with it? What is wrong with that particular, or what is questionable
I do not hear rocket engine sounds.
Correct.
From the inside.
The point is, you can hear their voices very clearly.
Yes. You should at least hear the roar of that engine, because you're talking about thousands of pounds of thrust, right?
That's right. 10,000 pound of thrust. The same power as a Harrier jump jet.
So why can't we hear anything?
Well, exactly. Now, the obvious answer to that is, well, they're wearing their spacesuits, and you wouldn't hear anything if they're wearing their spacesuits. Well, that's a logical answer. But you have to, again, look at the detail of it. They were standing inside the lunar lander. Not sitting, they were standing, both of them, side by side, Aldrin and Armstrong. And the voice you hear is primarily of Aldrin reading out the figures of how fast the craft was descending and how far across the surface it was moving. So many feet down, so many feet across. That's the figures, and that's the voice. And Armstrong, as we know, had taken over manual control of the spacecraft because the computer had shown a 1201 warning, which indicated the computer overload. So he'd taken over manual control, so he was operating the craft himself. And part of the controls are a computer keyboard, fairly small switches and dials, which he have to operate, as well as the joystick-type control to manipulate the engines.
Mm-hmm.
And we're being asked to believe that he's doing all this while wearing his spacesuit. Now, you can't wear half a spacesuit. You've got to wear the whole thing, gloves and all. Would you wear heavy-duty gardening gloves to operate the computer keyboard if your life depended on it, which his did at this point? I think not. You would probably try to operate it with your hands unencumbered.
If you could, I mean...
If you could.
Yeah.
So if he was doing that, which is the logical explanation for what was occurring, that he was not wearing his spacesuit, then the cabin of the lunar lander had to have been pressurized with an atmosphere so that he could breathe.
True.
And the pressure would have been about 5 pounds per square inch, which is what they used in space. But if it was pressurized, there was an atmosphere, and sound travels in an atmosphere. And the rocket that was firing to slow the craft down to land on the surface was just below his feet. And rockets, as we know, when they fire, make an awful lot of noise and vibration. And some of that, I contend, would have been audible on that tape, which either indicates he was wearing a spacesuit, in which case how do you operate it with your armored gauntlets, or he wasn't, in which case how can you hear it in the first place? So there is a major question about that very famous sequence of the landing of Apollo 11.
I'll tell you the one thing that puzzles me, Marcus, over and above everything, is that when Kennedy made that challenge, we got there within 8 years, right?
That's right. Eight years, correct.
Bush wants to go back to the moon. Now, keep in mind, we went to the moon with technology that is 40 years old today. So whatever the technology was 40 years ago, it surely isn't what it was like today. So Bush makes an announcement that we should go back to the moon, but it's not going to be for 20 years. And I'm saying to myself, now we've one, already been there. Two, we've been there with really old technology. The technology now is so good. Why do we have to wait 20 years? That I don't understand. We should be able to theoretically get there in 3 years, 5 years, maybe.
I'm with you on this. I'm right there.
I mean, we got a blueprint for how to get there. We know what it takes. The rocketry is available. I mean, the technology is around. It's better. Why do we have to wait 20 years? So when he said that, I will say for the very first time, it puzzled me because I didn't understand that.
Yeah, it puzzled a lot of people.
It can't be money. No. To me, it was, do we not have the technology to get to the moon? That's the only time I've ever questioned it. And I still believe, and I'll say it again, we've been to the moon, but that one puzzled me.
Well, I'm definitely with you on that one, because I was waiting for the announcement that President Bush made, because it had been trailed beforehand that he was going to make an announcement about space. This was, what, a year or so ago?
Yeah.
And I thought, great, you know, America going back to the moon. Now we can get the truth about Apollo. Because, believe me, the first time anybody goes back to the moon, the first thing they're going to do is a bit of sightseeing.
Absolutely.
Hey, let's go and look at those Apollo sites.
Yep.
You know, there's six of them. There's got to be one here somewhere. Come on, guys, let's go have a look.
Sure.
What's it like? First thing they're going to do, oh, whoops, NASA, Houston, you've got a problem. There's nothing here. Now, if that's the situation, maybe this is why Bush is trying to push it back further and further, so that all the people around today who might be in a position to question it will have been maybe gone to join the great spacecraft in the sky, and we can look down and have a bit of a giggle.
Well, interesting point.
But you're quite right to say that how come it's going to take twice as long to get back to the moon as it did to get there in the first place?
With older technology.
I mean, we're told that the computing power on the lunar lander was no greater than your average desktop calculator is today. It didn't need a great deal of computing power, possibly. It only needed to crunch a few numbers. But if you look at the ability to make the craft, to test them, and to do it, we have all that now. There's a very interesting announcement which relates to this by the then head of NASA, Sean O'Keefe, who's recently tendered his resignation.
Correct, yeah.
He made an announcement about 2 years ago when he was appointed, and he said, during my tenure as director of NASA, I will have two major objectives that we intend to reach. One is the development of advanced propulsion systems for deep space travel, and the second is research into the protection of astronauts from the dangers of radiation in space. Hello? Hadn't they solved that on Apollo? The astronauts were up there on Apollo 17. They were out in space for 12 days. Why do we now need to do the research to find out how to protect them? Go and ask Ed Mitchell. He knows. He was there. Wouldn't that be a reasonable answer?
True.
Now, I thought, okay, these spacesuits the guys use, they must have been particularly good at protecting them from radiation. So I contacted the manufacturers of the spacesuits, a company called Hamilton Standard in Connecticut, and said, these spacesuits that you make for the Apollo astronauts, they still make spacesuits for NASA today, these spacesuits you made for the Apollo astronauts, because they obviously protected the astronauts from the radiation levels in space, because all the astronauts went to the moon and came back again, they're all still alive, or they were when I made the question. Could these same spacesuits be used by technicians to go into Chernobyl or Three Mile Island nuclear reactors and clean up the mess? No, they said. Why, I said. Because there is no protection from radiation built into those spacesuits. Why, I said. You must direct your questions to NASA. We built it to their specification. So I asked NASA. Guess what? No reply.
Nothing.
So the question remains. If these spacesuits are so good at protecting astronauts from the radiation levels of space, which are similar, but not identical to, but similar to the radiation levels generated by the sun in deep space beyond the Van Allen radiation belts, why can't they be used by technicians to go into a nuclear reactor?
All right, what about this? What about the moon rocks? We've got 800-plus pounds of moon rock.
Yep, 840 pounds of moon rocks.
So are you saying this stuff's not from the moon?
I'm not saying it's not from the moon. I'm just saying, did the 12 named Apollo astronauts actually collect it all from the moon?
Are you saying it could have been done robotically?
I'm saying it could have been done robotically, and it was done robotically by the Russians. They did exactly that. They didn't bring a lot of... They brought 300 grams of surface material back. They sent a robotic craft to the moon. It landed. It scooped up a few grams of... in fact, it was about half a pound. 300 grams, about half a pound of surface material, and brought it back to Earth.
Well, what about this 840 pounds you just mentioned?
Okay, that is what we're told the six Apollo missions that landed brought back with them. Now, that 840 pounds, I've seen the sample of moon rock, which is on display in our science museum here in London. It's a small thing about the size of a half brick. Not particularly big, and it's in a very nice display case, and it has a big sign on it saying moon rock. So who am I to doubt the science museum's description? They never get things wrong. Don't mention the Piltdown Man. Now, that's maybe a little bit cynical. We also know that Wernher von Braun, accompanied by several NASA scientists, visited Antarctica in 1967. What was he doing in Antarctica in 1967? Fast forward to 1996, when then-President Clinton makes an announcement about the discovery of fossilized bacteria in a rock from Mars. Well, we know that nobody's been to Mars to collect rocks and bring them back.
True.
This rock is known by its number, ALH0084, which stands for Allen Hills, 1984, when it was discovered. Allen Hills is an area in Antarctica where a lot of meteorite material is recovered. No secret about that. It was only the examination of this rock which identified possible fossilized bacteria. So we know that rocks can land in Antarctica, having been dislodged from Mars, presumably by meteorite impact. The same thing can presumably happen on the Moon. Now, what we're seeing, or what we're told of the 840 pounds of moon rock, 600 pounds of that total is still locked in the vaults at Houston. It has never seen the light of day. So we only have to take NASA's word for it. NASA, which possibly stands for Never a Straight Answer, wouldn't necessarily be the best people to convince us that we're being told the truth. Some of the rock has been distributed to scientific establishments, universities, research laboratories around the world. How many people have read the reports of the research that was done? Well, I have. Now, the interesting point that most people come to is when you talk about moon rocks, everybody imagines things, you know, pebbles, lumps of rock.
Yeah, a little things, something you grab with your hand.
Yeah, something you grab with your hand, sort of fistfuls of rock. The research was done on a few grams of material that had been ground up, put into a box, labeled moon rock, and sent to these laboratories.
Marcus, stay with us. Stay with us. Go ahead, finish real quick. I got 10 seconds. Can you do it?
How do we know they were examining rocks brought back by Apollo and not from Antarctica?
Let's come back with phone calls at the halfway point next hour. We'll have our fast blast poll as well.